Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Welcome. Glad you're with us for our second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. And a quick reminder, we actually have 4 hours of live radio here today.
And part of it, we may even touch on medicine.
Well, yeah. I'm pointing my finger here.
Uh-oh.
Okay. 4 hours. And if you'd like to know where we are for all 4 hours, you can simply go to our website, lmclinic.com, and push the podcast button at the top right-hand corner of the page, and it will drop down for you the information of where we are for all 4 hours, 8 to 10 right here on KTTH. And then 10 to noon on another station, you can find that, again, on our website. But also, when you push that podcast button, it will give you access to all of our previous shows, including this one. And the last hour or whatever, last Saturday, and you just simply go there and, you can go back. So when you hear something today, for example, that is really intriguing, you want to hear it again, or maybe you have an Uncle Harry or Aunt Sue that you think might enjoy it, you just tell them where to go and they can listen to it as well.
Especially if Aunt Sue needs eye surgery.
Well, yes, we all know people who probably need some help.
Or Uncle Harry has macular degeneration.
That's right. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Dr. Michael Gilbert with Northwest Vision Institute. We try to get him in here at least once a quarter. And with that in mind, if you have a question for him, you simply call right now. We have a couple of lines open at 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. So you call, and we will have him answer that question. With that, let's take another call. Let's go to Spanaway and talk with Don. Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good,
we're
good.
Doing good. How can we help you, ma'am?
So I have a question about the coronavirus or the vaccine.
Uh-huh.
So I'll summarize it this way. As I understand it, there are two manufacturers of vaccines that will be available. And so my questions are, we have COVID-19, and then we have coronavirus, which is COVID-19 is part of the coronavirus family.
Yes.
So those vaccines are my question is, specifically target COVID-19, or do they target the coronaviruses as well?
Good
and
question.
And also, you had mentioned several months ago that you had signed up for the trials. Did mm-hmm. you actually
I did not get accepted. No, I did not get accepted.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I tried. But you know, one of my adages is, if you try, you might fail, but if you don't try, you're a failure. So, okay, coronaviruses are a fairly common virus, and about one third, roughly 30% of the of the respiratory infections in humans in normal years are caused by one coronavirus or another. So we, most of us, have had infections of coronaviruses at some point, usually in what we class as a cold of some sort. But this novel coronavirus, this particular one, is more closely related to SARS and MERS, the more serious, potentially fatal infections that also came out of China in previous years. So there may well be some degree of cross-protection, but it doesn't seem to be so much in the antibody response as in the T-cell response. We've got two different classes of immune cells in the human body. And there is the B cell, and the B cells make antibody. And so you get infected, the B cells start responding, and over a period of several days to a week, they ramp up their production, and you actually peak your production of antibodies after about 10 days to 2 weeks. And then those antibody levels start to decline. For some infections and some individuals, they decline fairly fast. They can be gone in 3 or 4 months in some people. In other people, they may hang around for 2 or 3 years. But the antibody response most of the time attenuates. It shrinks over time. At what point it gets so low that you are once more susceptible to an infection is problematic. The respiratory infections, the coronaviruses that cause the human common colds, for instance, we do make antibodies to them, but we usually lose that antibody response fairly fast. So you can catch a cold 2 or 3 times a year, you know, from the same virus. There is another form of immunity called T-cell immunity, and these are our natural killer cells. These learn to respond to a particular set of proteins on the invading organism, whether it be a bacteria or a virus. And they now have a learned response that will usually stay there for the rest of your life. And when something that has that particular protein complex comes along and invades your body, those T cells go into hyperproduction, and they work in a different way. The antibodies actually bond to and try to destroy the virus. The T cells, the natural killer cells, attack the cell that has been invaded by the virus and kill the recipient cell before it can then fill up with virus and spread it to a wider part of your system. So they kill the infected cells rather than trying to destroy the virus itself. So it's a different mechanism. But the T cell response, the T cell response is wider because there is cross reactivity. Depending on how many of the proteins on the surface of the virus are found with different coronaviruses, and we think that's why some people, even though they haven't been exposed to the novel coronavirus, seem to have a natural degree of immunity. They either don't get infected or they control the infection very, very quickly because they have natural killer cells that are already prepped for coronaviruses in general and do a better job of protecting those individuals. Does that answer your question?
That is the best explanation I have ever heard. Is this why some people could end up with a cytokine storm?
I've heard that
they've had some issues with that.
That
is a great explanation.
The cytokine storm is essentially an over-response of our immune system. This particular virus is apparently extremely good once it gets into your vascular tree and your pulmonary tree, down deep in your chest, at triggering a very, very potent immune response. And it's this overwhelming immune response that actually ends up in the process of trying to destroy the virus, causes blood clots throughout the microcirculation, the small blood vessels in your lungs. And it wasn't so much that the lungs were filling with fluid and pus as it would in a typical pneumonia. That's why the ventilators didn't work as well as the pulmonologists thought it was going to. The problem wasn't a classic pneumonia. The problem that looked like a pneumonia was that all the micro blood vessels around those alveoli, those sacs that exchange gases in your lung, they were plugging up and you didn't have adequate blood supply. You were basically killing your lungs by starving them for blood supply. And so we would put people on the ventilators trying to force oxygen through what we thought were damaged alveoli. And the problem was the alveoli were just dying for lack of blood supply. And so almost everybody that went on a ventilator went on to die. The ventilator didn't really help because we were treating the wrong thing. It was actually massive clotting in the microcirculation caused by this over response of the immune system to the virus.
Awesome. Can I ask you one more question?
Go ahead.
Well, real quick.
It's real quick. Some friends of mine who are nurses and physician's assistants have been reading up about this, these different vaccines, and they're saying that they're really painful and that they're concerned that people won't come back because it takes two vaccinations to make it function. Have you heard anything about that being really painful?
Yeah, personally, I want the Moderna version rather than the the Pfizer version, because from what I have seen from the trials, the Moderna is much less uncomfortable. It's apparently a more benign shot. It also takes two injections. It's just I'm a bit of a wuss, and I'd rather I'd rather have the one that that hurts the least.
We're talking about pain just with the shot.
With the shot itself.
During the shot.
Yeah.
The people that took the Pfizer vaccine often reported fatigue, low-grade fever, muscle aches, and a significant degree of soreness where they got the injection for 2 or 3 days. Now, that beat the hell out of catching COVID-19, but it sounds relatively unpleasant to me, and the Moderna people are reporting much more benign sort of injections.
And efficacy was very close to the same.
Very close.
The same.
Yeah. You know, 94.5, and the other one originally said 90, and then they came back and said, well, ours is 95 too. So I don't know.
Thank you very much, guys. I'll let you go and get on with your vision stuff, which I do plan on going for.
Okay.
That's really good. Thanks, Don.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Renton and talk with Ed. Hello, Ed. Welcome.
Morning, Ed.
Hi. My question is an eye question.
Okay. Well, we happen to have an eye doctor here, sir.
I know. I have a question, and I was diagnosed about 2 years ago with a thing called vitreomacular traction syndrome. And the symptom is that when I look at a telephone pole, it has a tiny little curve right in the middle. Or if I look at a horizontal line, it has a little curve in the middle. And my doctor, my optometrist, or ophthalmologist, told me that there was surgery for it, but that typically the detachment happens automatically over a period of years. My left eye seems to have, or my right eye seems to have successfully detached. And I don't have that problem, but my left eye still has it. Any comment about if what I should do? Should I consider the surgery or just wait a little longer?
You weren't very clear about how long you've been following this, and also whether it's changing from exam to exam. So first of all, for those who aren't clear about what this means, those of us, anyone, almost everyone, surely, if you pay attention to it, has had some floaters. Floaters come from the gel in the back of the eye, and as the eye matures, that gel shrinks a little bit, starts to pull away from the retina, and generally it separates cleanly, but periodically you can have flashes of light, new floaters. If you have any of those acute changes, you need to get that checked out. That needs to be checked because sometimes in that separation in the periphery, it can cause retinal detachments. What happens when that same membrane, that same gel in the back of the eye, is pulling free from the central vision as opposed to the periphery where we get the flashes and the floaters? Well, the vast majority, it just lifts gently off of the central vision, has no impact, it's done. And we don't really know about it. It's quite silent, can happen anytime there are no symptoms. But in a very small percentage of patients, as is your situation, that vitreous, that gel in the back of the eye that causes floaters, is adherent to the macula as it is in youth, but then can't quite let go. And so as that gel is pulling on it, it starts to distort it. So the distortion in that central macula, which is responsible for our sharpest vision and also our color vision, by the way, but our sharpest vision becomes a little distorted. So straight lines become curved, distorted, wiggled. And it is possible for that membrane to eventually pull free as it does from the rest of the retina. However, in some people, it's just stuck there distorting it. And so the best way is to monitor that and see if it's gradually pulling free. I would say in my experience, less than 50%. If it gets to the point where it's truly distorting the vision to the degree that you describe, I'd say somewhat less than 50% will spontaneously release. But it's definitely worth having that carefully monitored with the technology that exactly tracks how much is adherent, how much is being distorted, because it can damage that center if it's distorting it enough. And so, you know, a good ophthalmologist with the right technology can certainly monitor this. I'm delighted that as of this year, my son has joined me, who did this work at Harvard and is particular in macula and retinal specialty, and is excellent at monitoring this. So if you need a second opinion, I can certainly recommend him. I think it's worth getting a second opinion because you want to know that it's not doing so much distortion that it's time to do it so that there is no permanent damage to that central vision. Because once it gets pulled far enough or does some damage in that distortion, the retina is extremely sensitive tissue and it doesn't always go 100% back to its normal contour, which is to say lines being perfectly straight. So knowing when it's more likely to release, seeing that each time you're looked at, it is releasing on its own versus needing a little help in getting it there.
Okay, I've been monitored for 2 years now.
Okay, how often?
Later this week, I'll be going in for my third monitoring session.
Okay, I think if it's improving, then you can be hopeful. If it's not, and the distortion is problematic, then I think it's worth getting a second opinion or considering having the surgery. But it really depends on how much distortion there is in your vision and whether or not there is a spontaneous progression in that release, or if it's just plain stuck and distorting your vision.
Okay. There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed.
Appreciate it.
You betcha. Appreciate that. And for those of you who want to make an appointment with Dr. Michael Gilbert, here's his number in Bellevue, by the way, 425-450-2020. We've got some more calls, a couple more for you, and Dr. Gilbert. Okay. And but anything goes here at 866-86-YOUNG is, that's the longevity number. Sorry,
right.
I'm reading the wrong line. If you have a question for us here, 800-465-8770. I only have about 14 numbers to keep track.
You have to excuse Pete. He's having a Biden moment.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, ouch.
Anyway, don't go far. We will be back before you know it.
My husband and I have been listening. I wanted to tell you, you guys are absolutely delightful. The three of you make this perfect gem. We are planning to become patients very soon, and we love the information that Dr. Mixon conveys. It can't be found anywhere else.
Come with me, my love, to the sea of love. I want to tell you how much I love you.
Jerry, I switch back to the oldies here. We'll do the Christmas music in another week or two. It just seemed a little too early for Christmas music, but that's okay. I understand some of the radio stations started their 100% Christmas music before Thanksgiving. So I just don't need it. I love Christmas, but not that much. Anyway, I've got Dr. Michael Gilbert with Northwest Vision Institute with us today. Let us take...
I wanted to tell...
Oh, yes.
We had the woman who called about the immunity and the vaccines. And just wanted to also let her know there are two more that are very close and that will probably be applying for their emergency applications in January or February. So there are... They're a month or two behind as far as their phase three studies go, but they should be wrapping them up here pretty quick. So we'll probably have three or four vaccines by February or March.
These two new ones?
The two new ones are single injections, not dual injections. Yeah. So they would just be one shot. Now, I have no idea how comfortable or uncomfortable those injections are.
And those also don't require the severe cold for distribution. Yes. Storage.
Although Moderna can go in a regular refrigerator, can stay up to 6 months just in a regular refrigerator. So, yeah, it's only the Pfizer one has to be 180 degrees below zero.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Good. Let's go to Maple Valley and talk to Joe. Joe, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I had implant. I have a question for the eye doctor, Dr. Gilbert.
Listening.
About 5 years ago, I had implants installed, and after the surgery, I had double vision, and I've had to have glasses to correct that since then. Is it possible to replace those lenses with the auto-focusing implants?
Okay. First of all, any time you're assessing double vision, the very first, most important question is, do you get that double vision if you cover one eye or the other? Which is to say, is it only when you're using both eyes, or... If you cover one eye, can you still see what some people describe as double, but it's kind of a shadowing? You see a second shadowed image of the first. Do you have a sense of that? If you cover one eye, cover the other, do you still have doubling, or is it only when you're using both eyes?
I believe it's only with both eyes. I haven't
noticed
there are, it.
Like, okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just checking right now, and it's, 3 or 4 feet away, I have single vision using a single eye.
Okay. And if you uncover the other eye, we're doing an exam on the air, which I think is very exciting, actually. This is called telemedicine, surely in any criteria. So if you uncover both eyes, do you now have the double vision?
Not at close range, but
okay.
Anything, a few hundred feet away, at double vision.
Okay, so I don't have an easy answer to your question. It really would take more of an exam that I can do on the radio. As Dr. Mixon says, I am just the doctor on the radio. I'm not examining you. But I can give you some general ideas. If this became present, so there are things that can happen that can cause double vision. Most commonly, for what you've described, it's related to the muscles. However, if you just noticed it when and you had the implants, then more than likely it's related to the prescription relative between the two eyes. And I'd have to see where you are to know whether current laser technology is the answer or evolving medical laser technology. But I think that the answer is most likely, based on what you've said, if it just occurred with the implants. Dry eyes are a possibility because that can cause some doubling. But usually that would be one eye, the other, but not necessarily only when you're using both eyes. If it just happens with both eyes and it can be corrected with the glasses, then I think there is a significant chance that laser technology can improve this. It may mean just lasering one eye. It may mean lasering both. And now I just want to really separate that answer from the second part you asked, which was, is there a way to do, can we switch out to the more sophisticated implants? Well, the answer is yes, you can. Parenthetically, I don't think it'd be the answer to your problem, but I think many more people are asking the question that you did, which is to say, if I have the old style implants, can I get the new ones? Yes. But the risk may be worse than, maybe more than the benefit. So that would be something to be evaluated and looked at. However, there is laser technology today that can enhance the optical performance of the old lenses. So that's an important answer. And as I alluded before, there's some evolving laser technology that can take the current implant technology and supercharge it to the more advanced technology. Now, that's not FDA approved yet. That's kind of looking into the future. But even today's sophisticated laser technology, we can improve your overall optics of those older lenses. And in your situation, if it's because of the implants that the eyes are fighting, that laser technology can reestablish some of the, you know, the situation that allowed you not to have that double vision before surgery. Depending on what exactly that was.
The other thing I've noticed is with time, my vision still seems to change, and I thought that would be fixed after having the implants installed. I thought my vision would stay the same forever. But I'm noticing trouble reading. In fact, I've got an eye appointment here next month to go in and have my eyes checked again. And my vision seems to be getting worse even after the implant, you know, in addition to the double vision problem. But it's just focusing, reading a book or looking at some distant object. There's a, it's not real clear.
So
and
quick
I
question.
That problem would go.
Quick question, doing our on-the-air exam again. When you're reading, can you not read at all, or is it just equally poor as you're trying to read? Or can you read for a while and then it gets worse?
No, it's when I start reading, you know, the print is not clear. It's kind of fuzzy.
And then does it get worse as you're reading?
No, I can't say that.
Okay.
No.
If it gets worse as you're reading, which is probably more commonly true, that's your eye drying out. And certainly one of the tests I'd ask you to do at home, and this will help your eye doctor if you do it before you go in, when you're trying to read with or without your glasses, does putting in a drop of artificial tears make a difference? Because the most common reason that you start degrading reading vision after implants is the eye drying out, especially reading computer screen time. Because as you said, the vast majority of patients, once you have that implant, the prescription is stable for decades. It is possible for it to change, but the vast majority are stable for decades.
This is we're going to have to go to another caller here, but Joe, this is yet another reason why Dr. Mixon has selected Michael Gilbert as our guest on Leading Edge Medicine. This is why we recommend to our listeners so often that they might consider a second opinion. And for those of you who want to consider a second opinion, you can contact Dr. Gilbert at Northwest Vision Institute. And here's his number, 425-450-2020.
425-450-2020. I'm going to try to sneak in another before Dr. Gilbert has to go. Let's go to Linwood real quickly and talk with Ed. Hello, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Okay, quick and simple, I hope. My father is 90 years old. He had a retinal hemorrhage a number of years ago. He was getting Avastin shots in the eye every 4 to 6 weeks. A year or so ago, they switched from Avastin to Eylea, and we were able to go, instead of 4 to 6 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks. Well, after an injection, he developed a macular hole, and now he's legally blind. They're talking about I don't know the actual statement for it, but the statement was a gas bubble surgery. Is there something else that can be done, or is that the safest thing? And do we do that now, or do we do that when COVID is a little more under control? At 90, there's a limit to how much I'm going to fight with doctors and being in hospitals for surgeries.
Sure. Well, it's very difficult. You know, we were just talking about doing an exam on the air, and it's a little difficult to help your dad without knowing exactly what his acuity is, what his best acuity was before the hole. All of those things are going to apply.
Before the hole, he was averaging 20/50 to 20/80. Now he's legally blind in both eyes.
And the other eye is also from macular degeneration?
No, that was from a stroke in 07.
Okay. Well, because I think the overall acuity, if one eye's working and the other eye has a hole, then I might defer the surgery or avoid it altogether for someone over 90 years old.
Well, the macular hole was in what was considered the good eye.
In which case, depends on the overall health of your dad, but if it were me or my dad, I would be looking at intervening. The longer the macular hole, fortunately, it's not a fast-moving problem. And since we're close enough to a vaccine, it's not irrational to put it off for a few months.
Okay.
However, I don't consider eye surgery today high risk. It does mean going out. You're going into waiting rooms, but I think that the precautions in every ophthalmic office that I know of for my consultants, I feel very confident. A good friend of mine is the head of the Kaiser ophthalmology department, and I have full confidence. So I would take their advice from their retina specialists. Macular holes are not going to go away on their own. There is only really surgical intervention. And that surgical intervention is really relatively new in our surgical armamentarium. It's really because of advances in surgical technology that we're able to repair those. It's not that long before, once you had a macular hole, you had no option but to be stuck with that legal blindness. So I think for your dad, I think it probably meets the risk benefit for intervening.
And Ed, thank you for your call. I'm afraid the music is playing. We gotta run, and we have to say goodbye to Dr. Michael Gilbert, Northwest Vision Institute. Thanks for coming in, Michael.
Oh, thank you. It's always a joy, a lot of fun.
We just heard that just yesterday that Dr. Umat wasn't able to be here, so I quickly called you, and boom,
my
you're
pleasure.
Here. So thank you.
Just a hoot.
Appreciate that very much.
Thank
if
very
you
much.
Want to help and to see Dr. Michael Gilbert at Northwest Vision Institute, you can call to set up an appointment at 425-450-2020. He's in Bellevue and Totem Lake. 425-450-2020. Again, thanks, Michael. And folks, we will be back. We've got just about all the lines open for your questions for Dr. Jerry Mixon at 800-465-8770. You call now, boom, you're next. 800-465-8770.
I went to a seminar 10 years ago. at that time, I noticed that my cholesterol had spiked, and plus I was going through menopause at the time, and there were just lots of changes going on. And once I got on hormones and got straightened out, I just saw a total change in everything. I mean, I saw results like within 2 weeks. It was truly a miracle, and so, you know, I'm hooked.
Talbot here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, the founder and chief medical officer of Longevity Medical Clinic. You just heard this lady, Jerry, talk about her enthusiasm as a patient. She went to a seminar, was fascinated. Well, we basically decided, let's make the radio show pretty much the seminar, and we switched over. But we do have some seminars in the making, wouldn't you say?
I hope so.
Well, I hope
so. I enjoyed them.
Well, you enjoy them. It's like your playtime or your dessert, you might say. And in the meantime, though, we do have some videos online, which are a pretty good substitute for a seminar.
Little webinars.
Yeah. Well, webinars, videos, whatever. And the one that I think is the most there's two. We have a basic introduction to longevity. That's about a 46-minute video that basically gives the who, what, where, why, and when of Longevity Medical Clinic. The next one that you did, it sort of as a part two, is called the two stages
of aging.
Two stages of aging. Yeah. Give us a 1 minute overview of the two stages of aging.
1 minute?
Well, okay, two or three.
I can't order breakfast in a minute.
And by the way, in the meantime, we do have some lines open. So while you are doing this, those of you who want to ask Dr. Mixon a question, we've got another 20 minutes, so we can sneak another two or three of you in. So call now at 800-465-8770, and we'll get you on. Two stages of aging.
Okay, first stage of aging is what we have treated for the last 22 years, and that is a age-related decline in our growth factors, in which your body is able to repair less and less efficiently. Your hormone levels are declining. Your metabolism is slowing down. You're shifting your metabolism away from muscle towards fat. Your cognitive decline is starting to become noticeable. And basically, it's those common but undesired changes of aging, which you're getting slower, weaker, fatter, dumber, and losing your sexuality. That's the first stage of aging. And my alternative to that is to refer to it as reproductive aging.
Okay.
That's the aging process in which we are no longer fit to become parents, and which we raise our kids till they can replace us, and then we just kind of fade away. The second stage of aging is a senescent aging. It's in which our cells are actually becoming senile. Every cell in your body has a particular lifespan that is genetically coded. It's supposed to function for some period of time. And different cells have different expected lifespans. The lining of your gut is maybe 30 hours, and it turns over very quickly. Your skin, 2 to 3 weeks, depending on where it is on your skin. Muscle is a matter of several months. Brain cells for years at a stretch. So each type of cell has its own aging. But a small number of cells, when they reach the end of their genetic lifespan, they refuse to die. They effectively become zombie cells. They're still there. They're still alive, but they're no longer producing the normal peptides, enzymes, cytokines that healthy cells do. These are now kicking out anti-growth factors, pro-inflammatory, things that increase inflammation, increase the risk of cancer and decrease the ability to heal and repair and replace older cells. Those cells wouldn't be a problem if they just did it to themselves. But they release these peptides and enzymes into the cellular fluids. One senescent cell can inhibit the growth and development of up to 12 to 15,000 healthy cells.
Oh, one can affect 12 to 15?
Yes.
I thought you were going to say 12 to 15.
No, 12 to 15,000.
Oh, my.
So it doesn't take a very big percentage of these cells.
Yeah, right.
To inhibit our healing and our growth and our repair of our other healthy tissues.
So just getting rid of those zombie cells, whatever you want
yes,
to call them.
Yes, the senescent cells. Yeah. Yes. And so this is an anti-senescent therapy. We now have some therapies designed to kill, to force those cells to die. And so that's one of the things we've now added as our second phase of people that we've already done all the other stuff. We've decreased their inflammation. We've maximized their growth factors. We've gotten their hormone levels where they ought to be. We've changed their diet. We've changed their lifestyle. We've increased their exercise. And now we attack their senescent cells and get rid of those. That then allows your remaining healthy cells to heal and repair and reproduce more efficiently.
Now, you've done this. I'm about to have it done, and we now have patients at Longevity
We've got about 30-some patients that have entered into that second stage of therapies.
So how did that affect you, for example?
Well, I got better. I decreased my old war injuries. The pain decreased. My limitations decreased. I got stronger. I got faster again. I improved. Then there was yet another stage to the second stage, and that was the intravenous exosomes acellular vesicle therapies, which is much more expensive. The first one is only about $250. The second phase was a $4,500 intravenous infusion, and ideally should be done 3-4 times a year. So that's a big step up from an economic standpoint. But it gave me an additional boost. When I do both, when I've done the senescent cell therapy and the exosome acellular vesicle intravenous therapies, I got a fabulous response. So we've got a few folks that have said, wow, I want to try the whole hog. I want to do the big gun too. So like I said, we've got probably 30, 35 folks have done the senescent therapies and probably 3 or 4 that are going for the acellular vesicles.
So what did the exosomes do for you? Obviously you were improved when you started killing the senescent cells.
What I did was I did it as a 1-2. I did the anti-senescent therapy, and then about 10 days, 2 weeks later, I did the intravenous therapy. And that combination just turned my life around. I mean, for the first time in my adult life, I was totally pain-free. I had none of my old joint, I had a hand grenade shred my left knee. I had a bullet through my left elbow. My right wrist has a problem. I lost all the extensor tendons in that right forearm from another gunshot wound. I had a bullet clip my ankle, and it's given me all of that pain went away.
No kidding.
For the first time in my adult life.
40 years.
Yes. You know, these were injuries that occurred when I was like 19 years old. And for the first time in my entire adult life, I was totally pain-free. Now, that's an N of one, which is a pretty small statistical sample.
But you pretty darn exciting for you.
Very exciting for me. But, but again, I've been on phase one therapy for 22 years.
Yeah.
And then I've had more than a year and a half now of the anti-senescent therapies. And then I've added the exosome therapies on top of it. Most people don't have my history of interventions.
Right.
So I don't know how well everyone else will respond.
Yeah.
And so, it's one of those things that if you're like me, if you're an early adapter, or if you're like me and you're in your 70s and you don't have 20 years to wait and find out how things are going to turn out,
yeah.
know, and you want to say, well, damn it, I'm going to go for it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, it's available.
Well, again, this just brings up one more reason why you might want to consider making a free health analysis appointment. You can get started. There's nothing you can do about the past, but you can start today to affect the future.
Right.
That we absolutely know. And we're often asked, well, I'm 84 years old. Am I too old? Or we often get children in their 40s or 50s saying, well, my mom and my dad are in their 80s or 90s. Is it too late for them?
You know, it's never too late to give it a try. If you try, you might fail. But if you don't try, you can't possibly succeed. And so, I am confident I cannot do as much for an 80-year-old as I could do for a 50-year-old.
Yeah,
it's easier to prevent problems than it is to fix them.
Yeah,
it's just the real world.
But there's
things we can do, and the improvement you get in your 80s is still improvement.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And most people in their 80s are grateful for any improvement they get.
Yeah, there's not. I think it's probably safe to say, knowing our numbers, there's not a day goes by that we don't have people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and even 90s that sign up as patients at Longevity.
But let me, as long as we were talking about the fact that, you know, with my now triple therapy, I went totally pain-free. And yet, on this last trip to Hawaii, I came back.
Yeah.
And for some reason now, my left hip is giving me some grief.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, it's been months since I had my last exosome therapies.
Okay.
So this may be a hint that it's getting time to do it again.
Okay.
I don't know. But, you know, so I've gone several months now. Each time I've done it, I've gone several months totally pain-free. Now, whether it was because I was running harder in Hawaii, because I don't like to run in the cold air, and it was warm there.
Oh, yeah.
So I ran like a madman. And I may have abused my hip some.
Okay.
You know, but for whatever reason, it's given me a little grief this last couple of days since I've gotten back. And so, yeah, I am thinking about going in and doing the intravenous therapy one more time.
The bottom line, though, you can't change the past, but you can start from today on.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, the first, and it's really just a baby step, is make a free health analysis appointment.
Yep.
It's so easy to do. We give you two free tests, the blood test and also the special in-body combined. You'll understand what some of your basic health risks are. And through the end of the year, when you schedule now, you will be able to, we'll give you $100 of longevity supplements as well as an incentive. So it's a good time to go to lmclinic.com. We have appointments available, and happy to say, not a ton, but plenty, in all three clinics, in Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland. Go to lmclinic.com. It's easy to do. Schedule now, and the three clinics, select a clinic that will show up, and that schedule for, let's say, the Tacoma clinic will show up. You just, on the calendar, you just click on the appointment, like maybe Tuesday at 10 a.m., Wednesday at 3 p.m., that kind of a thing. Click on it, and that appointment is yours. It's free. And the $100 of supplements are free as well. Your choice at lmclinic.com. And for those of you without a computer, hey, you can call 866-86-YOUNG. Why don't you end the year doing something really smart that will affect the rest of your life? Hope you can do it. We'll be right back.
I'm just so pleased, and I just want people out there to know that they should go to your seminar. That's what we did, and, you know, it just made a difference. I never, ever had this much energy before, as long as I could remember. And I cannot believe the difference in my husband, internally changing him. I mean, he's honestly getting more confident. And just listening to the radio, you think, oh, you know, it's an advertisement. But when you're actually here and going through it, it's just a life changer.
quite the song. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to Jack. We've been making him wait a long time. My apologies, Jack. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, Jack.
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the COVID-19 vaccine.
Okay.
And in my reading of this, it appears that the technology of this vaccine is radically different from what would be conventional vaccines. It doesn't take dead bugs and make them out of that, but it's, I'm understanding that it's an mRNA type of thing, and I've heard some claims that it's capable of altering some of the DNA in the person that receives the vaccine. I want to separate the facts from the fiction, and okay. You're the one that I trust to do that.
All right. Well, thank you for the trust. I will try not to betray it for you. Yeah, messenger RNA is a brand new approach. You're right. Used to be. And by the way, this is an area in which I have a great deal of interest because my first academic degree was in microbiology. And so microorganisms, bacteria, viruses, and the immunologic response of humans to those, you know, was my first field of study before I went to medical school. So, it's kind of fun for me. Messenger RNA is just what it says. It is a messenger. It is not a part of our fixed genome. It's where one cell is communicating with another cell. And you heard me in a previous segment talk about the exosomes and acellular vesicles that I received intravenously. Our cells are constantly communicating with essentially every other cell in our body. Your muscle cells are communicating with your cartilage cells and your heart and your kidneys, and everything is intercommunicating. And they're doing that in ways of releasing these little tiny packets, membrane-coated packets, and many of them contain messenger RNA. And what is released from one cell will be taken up by another cell, and it essentially gets a message from that other cell that says, hey, this is happening down here. You know, you may want to respond to it. And so the stuff that I was taking was basically from a very, very youthful cells that had released these acellular vesicles into a broth, and we put them into me to trigger my aging cells to do a better job of growing, healing, and repairing. Okay. In the vaccine, the messenger RNA that has been generated is basically a messenger RNA that tells our immune cells to respond to these particular proteins when they see them. And so what we've basically done is identify the proteins on the virus. We've engineered messenger RNA that we put into the human body. That messenger RNA tells our immune cells, look for these proteins and attack them. And so is that a change? Well, yes, it is a change, and it's a change that we wanted to make, but it is not the sort of change that is going to go on for long periods of time. In fact, we don't know is this going to provide us protection for 3 months, 6 months, a year, a lifetime? We don't know, because the studies were only about 3 months long. All right. So we know that when we give it to people over this short period of time, we get immunity to the virus. We don't know when that immunity will start to fade, but these are very specific messengers aimed at very specific cells in our bodies. Does that help?
Right. Well, I'd seen a claim or two that this mRNA was capable of altering the DNA in the body.
It's telling,
received the
well,
shot.
Yeah, but not the germ cells. And again, this is a messenger RNA that says to an immune cell, to the immune cells in your body, essentially the beta immune cells in your body, look for this protein. That's all it says. Okay. So yes, there is a change in that immune cell. And it basically is the same sort of change that getting infected by that protein would make. See, every time you get a cold, you're making changes in your DNA. It's saying to your immune cells, look for this virus and kill it. Okay. So we're just giving that message in a specific packet is all. Instead of using the whole virus.
Okay, so you don't.
I will take the.
You don't see any potential.
No. I said I will take this. I will take these vaccines in a heartbeat as soon as they're available.
As will I. And with that, Jack, I'm afraid we got to go. We are out of time. The 2 hours, we have a minute left.